I'm Kelly Cervantes, and this is Seizing Life, a weekly podcast produced by Citizens United for Research in Epilepsy, CURE. My daughter Adelaide has been through more tests than I care to remember, from MRIs to biopsies and countless blood draws. Some of the most informative tests, though, can be related to genetics. That is why I am excited to have Dr. John Millichap on the show today talking about the connection between epilepsy and genetics. This evolving field of study is a key element to identifying and curing many forms of epilepsy in the future. Dr. Millichap is an attending physician for neurology and epilepsy at Ann and Robert H. Lurie Children's Hospital here in Chicago. He is also an associate professor of pediatrics and neurology at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine. Thank you so much for being with us today, Dr. Millichap.
I'm glad to be here.
So we know that our DNA controls our eye color, our body type, but what is the connection between genetics and epilepsy?
Sure. So we know a lot about the causes of epilepsy, and in the same breath, I'll say we know very little. So we know of hundreds of genes that are related to epilepsy, and having a variation in the genetic code for those specific genes alters the function of the machinery in the body that that gene codes for. So for example, a very common cause of epilepsy is related to ion channels. So a channel is like a hole. So if you can imagine a cell in the brain has a wall to it, and there's a small hole in that wall where salts like sodium and potassium might go in and out. And that balance of those salts going in and out is what keeps the electrical activity of the brain cells stable. So if there's a variation in that piece of machinery, in that channel, then the balance can be off. So where you have more electricity in that brain cell, and more electricity then leads to seizures. So that's just one example. There can be other genes that are related to the actual structure of the brain. So they can lead to actual malformations of the brain that we can see on a picture, like in an MRI.
So talking about variants in the genetic code, you know, not all epilepsies are necessarily inherited. You get your test results back and they're talking about this variant or that variant. What causes those variants if it's not hereditary?
Sure. This is one of the first things that I talk to parents about when I'm leading into talking about doing genetic testing or recommending genetic testing, is that most of the early onset childhood epilepsies are actually new in the child and not from the parents. So sort of back to basic biology, after the egg and the sperm come together, then it forms the child, and the DNA has to be copied every time the cell splits. And in everybody, you, me, every time that's copied, there's going to be little mistakes, little changes to the DNA. And sometimes those changes don't make any difference whatsoever. And we just go on being ourselves. And then sometimes early on, one little change will be then important. It will change the function of that one gene, of that one piece of machinery that it can cause epilepsy and be in all subsequent cells in the body.
So you get your epilepsy diagnosis, or in our case, we just saw developmental delay in our child, and that was when our neurologist started to order the genetic testing. But for a lot of people, it may be after that initial epilepsy diagnosis. What are the tests that are available? What are the tests that you order as a clinician? And what are you looking for in those tests?
Sure. I got into neurology about 11 years ago, and at that point, genetic testing was not used as a first-line test whatsoever. Things have changed to the point where almost every patient that I see today, once I've established the diagnosis of epilepsy, taken a history and looked at the EEG, the MRI, my examination, and I haven't determined a cause of the epilepsy, I'll talk to parents about the availability of genetic tests. And in many cases, the first test would be a focus test that would look at genes we know to be associated with epilepsy. And this test is called an epilepsy gene panel. Mm-hmm. And it has a high sensitivity for those specific genes that we know to be related to epilepsy. So maybe 100 or 200 genes have a strong association with epilepsy are included on the panel. And once we've done this test, we know that there's not a change in those genes because it looks at it with such depth and accuracy. And if that's unrevealing, we can go to the next step, which often involves the parents even more, where we'll take the child's blood and then also the blood of the parents and look at all of the portions of the DNA that make machinery, make the body. That's called whole exome sequencing. Okay. And the reason we take the parents' blood is because, as I said, we all have little variations that don't change anything in our bodies or have any significance. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of subtract any of those inherited variations from the child. So
right. So if you see the variant in the parent and then you're also seeing the variant in the child, but the parent is symptom-free, then that's probably not
right.
Your culprit.
Yeah. So the genetic testing company has a huge computer that does a lot of this initial sifting. Mm-hmm. And another thing that I'll constantly be reminding other doctors and trainees and parents is that the genetic testing that we do is not a static test. So if you had an MRI last week and the radiologist read it and the neurologist looked at it, that happened. That is what the MRI shows. But if you had a genetic test last month or 6 months ago or a year ago, that test is not static. We're always learning new things. The variations that were meaningless or the genes that were meaningless to epilepsy a year ago may today be the cause for your child's epilepsy.
So let's say you get through whole exome sequencing, and this was the case with our daughter. There were some variants of unknown significance, but there was no smoking gun, if you will. What does that mean, these variants of unknown significance? And what do you do next when you still don't have an answer after you've done the whole exome sequencing?
The terms that we use have changed over the last 5 years or so, mm-hmm. where instead of using the word mutation, which a lot of people think of, a change in the DNA that leads to disease, the Genetics Professional Association got together and have made a pretty clear criteria for us doctors to discuss these findings with families and with individuals. So now we have this sort of confusing or unknown VUS, we call it, or variant of unknown significance, that's right in the middle. And then above that, we have likely pathogenic or likely causing the disease, or in this case, likely causing the epilepsy, or straight pathogenic or causing the disease. And then on the other end, likely benign or likely not significant or just plain benign or not mm-hmm. the cause of the disease. So as you can imagine, VUS means we're not sure. So it neither has the criteria to make it definitely the cause or definitely not the cause. So I'll always warn parents when I send genetic testing that if we send this test, it may lead to more tests or it may lead to this uncertainty.
Sure. So now, I mean, very recent, I mean, talking like within the last year, really, there is now whole genome sequencing that has become available. Mostly, it seems to me, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but really just on a research level, it's not fully available commercially. What is the difference between the whole exome sequencing and whole genome sequencing? How can someone get their hands on, get submitted for testing for whole genome sequencing, and when should they?
So whole exome sequencing has some differences from the panel that I referred to first, having 200 genes that we look at very deeply, mm-hmm. and we can be sure that we didn't see any changes in those genes. The whole exome is still very good, but it doesn't have as many We call it reads. So if you have a gene, KCNQ2 is one cause of epilepsy that I'm very familiar with. And say it on a panel, it would read over it 200 times. It's like you read a book 200 times. You really know that book, right? And so then whole exome sequencing may only read over it 30 times or less. So it covers it, but not quite as deeply.
Okay.
And this is also the problem with whole genome sequencing. So it's an enormous amount of data. As you can imagine, whole exome is sort of the parts of the book that we can read or we think makes the story. Mm-hmm. And then whole genome sequencing is everything. It's the binding, it's the cover, it's the spaces around the letters, it's everything.
Okay.
The entire book. So it's even, parts of the DNA that we don't know how they may be related to, how the body works. And so that's an enormous amount of data. So we're learning more and more about how variants outside of the, traditional readable portions of the DNA can lead to disease. So the whole genome sequencing is available clinically now, and there's different companies that are making it available for insurance payment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still at a higher cost, but that will surely drop down. So I would say that in the next few years, that technology will probably take over the other technologies that we have. At that point, if somebody had testing several years ago, it would probably be a good time to get retested if no cause was found. And again, the number of reads will continue to increase as the technology improves and the cost drops.
So we've got the tests. We know what we're looking for, the variants. The number of different tests progressively going up. Why should someone get tested? What is, what can they get out of knowing what's causing the epilepsy, aside from peace of mind to know that there is, somewhere to direct their frustrations?
Sure. Well, and I think this is a really important point. And I was trained in neurology, and we knew something about genetics back in, 2007, 2008. We would be looking for various genetic causes of epilepsy. But it was 2012 when I really saw the power of genetic testing. A patient of mine was having, gene test after gene test after gene test. They were almost 2 years old at that point. And we tested for KCNQ2. They had seizures when they were born. And it came back with a variation. And the way that was the cause of the epilepsy. Mm-hmm. And the way that affected the family really struck me more than anything else that I could see with the value of genetic testing. It just changed their way that they looked at their child and the way that they approached me and the rest of the community. It allowed them to then combine or meet other families of children who have a genetic cause of epilepsy with the same genetic cause and gave them a lot of support, which otherwise they didn't have. They said, "We don't know why our child, can't talk." And
a prognosis.
It gives us a better idea.
Or at least a better idea of what that looks like. If you can look at other families, at other children who have a similar, you can be like, okay, this is what we can look out for. This is what we can expect. Yeah. There's so much peace of mind in that.
And then that's one of about 20 genes where it may change our approach. So we may choose different available seizure medications based on the genetic testing result. So tuberous sclerosis is a common cause of infantile spasms and other types of seizures. In the case of infantile spasms, we may prefer or recommend one treatment over another if we know that that's their cause. So a genetic diagnosis there can really help us. And in KCNQ2, SCN2A, SCN8A, several of these are all names of ion channels, or the holes in the wall of the cell. We may choose a specific type of medicine, very common medicines that we use to treat epilepsy, but we may not think to use in such a young baby unless we have this specific genetic diagnosis. So it's changed my practice. I look for the clinical signs of these genetic causes of epilepsy, confirm them, and then I'll choose specific medicines for that specific epilepsy, a cause of epilepsy. Mm-hmm.
Genetic testing can clearly be very helpful in terms of treatment. I also imagine that it can be incredibly useful on the research side of things. If you start to understand the cause behind some of these epilepsies, then we can sort of focus our research and get closer to curing some of these epilepsies, I would hope. Do you have a sense of how genetics is changing epilepsy research?
Yeah, absolutely. This goes along with some of my research interests as well. So back to that KCNQ2, it's actually one of the precision medicine genes, so to speak. So even before we knew that KCNQ2 was a cause of serious epilepsy, a seizure medication that was approved for the use in adults and was going to be approved for children but was only released for adults, focuses on that gene or the channel that gene makes, just because increasing the amount of this potassium salt that goes out of the cell stabilizes things for everybody. So a veteran who has a concussion, person who had a stroke, an adult who had a stroke and has epilepsy, either of those people would also benefit from this medicine that targets that specific gene. So once we learned it causes newborn onset epilepsy, it really opened our eyes to how important this system is for epilepsy and as a potential target for treatment. And the work we've been doing for the last 5 years has been to, try and see how we can use that drug or ones that are similar to it to hopefully reverse not only the seizures, but then all the developmental consequences as well.
These genetic tests can be so beneficial for prognosis, for treatment, but they can sometimes be difficult to obtain from the insurance companies because they are very expensive. What advice can you give to parents in trying to fight the insurance companies to approve this genetic testing, which can be so helpful? What conversations can they have with their doctors to try and make sure that they can get this testing for themselves or for their child?
Sure. So I think when things are new, the insurance companies and the hospital systems have to, take some time to catch up. I'm sure in the 1980s when MRI was new, there were doctors who said, well, we've been doing just fine with our CT scans. Why do I need this, newfangled test? But we've seen how helpful it's been with diagnosing more our children and our adults more accurately with epilepsy, and led to improved outcomes and probably lower costs overall. So I think genetic testing is there too. I think if I have a positive genetic testing result, I may do fewer EEGs, I may do fewer MRIs, I may do fewer invasive tests like lumbar punctures, that's putting a small needle in the back to get the fluid from around the brain, or muscle biopsies where I would take a portion of the muscle to look at under the microscope. So those tests were much more common just 10 years ago and less frequently done now because of the genetic testing results. So once we have that result, there could be enormous cost savings, which the insurance companies will probably soon realize that an earlier accurate diagnosis will lead to better outcomes and better use of our resources in the long term. But really, the price has dropped so much. An EEG, especially one that's done overnight, Compared to a genetic test, the EEG is much more expensive.
Really?
Yes. And also an MRI that requires sedation, mm-hmm. with all the anesthesia and all those other costs, much more expensive. So I think these things have really, really dropped down to where they're less expensive, but you know, it's just a matter of being covered or not covered, and mm-hmm. we have to change the understanding.
I have to constantly remind myself how new all of this testing is, that insurances, you know, these companies and doctors and they're really just learning how useful this can be and how it can cut down on the prices. I know I have found in speaking with parents who have children who are, you know, 10 years old, they've never had the genetic testing done because it wasn't available to them when their child was first diagnosed, where it was one of the very first tests that was done on Adelaide. And that it's just so shocking to me how quickly genetics has taken off. Where do you see it going? Where, you know, what new studies are being done out there? What new, what's on the horizon for genetics and epilepsy?
Well, I think the testing will become part of our common practice. So, you know, once we determine a patient has had a seizure or epilepsy, we'll do our usual history taking exam, picture of the brain of some sort, MRI likely, mm-hmm. And then EEG. And in most cases, we'll have a good idea of what the cause is maybe from those tests. But even beyond that, I think we may want to know what the underlying cause is or what the background of that patient is going forward. So I'm going to go out and say now that I think we'll be doing genetic testing on almost everybody very shortly, because even if you have a malformation of the brain, that malformation must have come from somewhere. It must be some mm-hmm. genetic change, or if your child had a stroke or had an infection and had a particularly bad response to the brain infection, there's, even though it may not be in an epilepsy gene, there's going to be some genetic predisposition to that child's over-exaggerated immune response to the bacteria, and there may be treatments that infectious disease specialists are looking at to ameliorate that. Everything's genetic, I think, will be the mantra going forward.
But tell your kids to go into genetics.
I do a lot of this myself, obviously. I'm able to talk to you about it, but genetic counselors are really helping us sub-specialists mm-hmm. With this explosion in genetic testing. So they're very important for talking about all of the inheritance and mm-hmm. Other questions that come up that are, you know, beyond my epilepsy wheelhouse, so to speak.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's so exciting to me is that, you know, we have these staggering statistics in epilepsy where, you know, over half the people who are diagnosed don't know what is causing their seizures, and just how helpless that can make a person feel when you just don't know why, and how do you treat something if you don't know why. But I have to imagine that with the availability of genetic testing, that we'll start to see those numbers come down, that mm-hmm. we'll start to see more and more people having an answer, and less people being undiagnosed.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, as we talked about in the beginning of our conversation, just having a cause is so reassuring for families, mm-hmm. Even if it's, not a cure or we don't have an answer today, just meeting other families that are going through a similar experience, avoiding further testing that can be invasive or expensive, mm-hmm. is really important. And our goal of precision medicine is still there. It's very complicated, and we're inching towards it in different ways.
Well, crossing fingers that we get there sooner rather than later. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us today and for helping keep this very sciencey conversation accessible to the lay person like myself. So I really do appreciate your time and letting me pick your brain.
It was great talking with you. Thank you.
I'd like to thank Dr. Millichap for his insights and experience on the genetics of epilepsy. While we have made steps towards understanding how genetics causes epilepsy, we have so much more to do. More than 50% of people with epilepsy still do not know the cause. Without this information, it can be extremely challenging to find the best treatment. But further funding of genetic epilepsy research could close this gap. Cure has been instrumental in leading us towards personalized medicine based on epilepsy and genetics. Help us do more by donating to Citizens United for Research in Epilepsy at seizinglife.com.
The opinions expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of Cure. The information contained herein is provided for general information only and does not offer medical advice or recommendations. Individuals should not rely on this information as a substitute for consultations with qualified healthcare professionals who are familiar with individual medical conditions and needs. Cure strongly recommends that care and treatment decisions related to epilepsy and any other medical condition be made in consultation with a patient's physician or other qualified healthcare professionals who are familiar with the individual's specific health situation.